Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Erie County Executive Candidates in Conversation. Now, Mark Poloncarz on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Good morning. It is 8 o'clock, and incumbent Mark Poloncarz joining us in studio for the next hour. Great to have you here, Mark.
It's good to be here, Susan.
Yeah, thank you. This is a day off today, right, for county employees?
No, it's not. County government is open.
Okay.
A number of years ago, county government workers were given a choice of a particular day. They were reducing the amount of holidays that we had. And it is a day, so if people need to, if they're off from work and they've got business that they want to get done through county government is open. Our parks are always open 365 days of the year. So come on down, and we're here to serve you.
All right. So this race, how have you liked it? Do you like running in a race? Do you like that part of being a politician?
Well, if you don't like it, you shouldn't be running, first off, because it is exceptionally time-consuming. You have an opportunity to meet the people of our community. I think it's important that you get out there and meet folks one-on-one, get a chance to talk to them. Because if you don't, you don't hear back from what your bosses, the constituents, are saying. And Erie County is a very diverse county. It's the same size as the state of Rhode Island. It has a population that's greater than five states. So when I say the same size, it's geographically the same size. It's urban, suburban, and rural. We have a very large, diverse population. So you can deal with issues in the inner city, and then I could be driving 45 minutes out to an hour and talking to a farmer down in Concord or Eden about the issues that they're facing. So I think it's important that you get out. I do enjoy the opportunity to get out and talk to my constituents and hear back from them. And if you don't like it, then you probably shouldn't be running for office, because that's what this job entails. You basically are spending 4 years out of your life serving the public, getting out there doing the same thing. Of course, during a campaign year, it's probably a little bit more than usual. But if you're not interested in meeting the public and attending various events and hearing from your bosses, then you probably shouldn't be running for these offices.
You talk to everybody. What are they telling you? What are they most concerned about when you ask them?
Well, it varies. I mean, one of the biggest things that I've heard that was not discussed in the most recent televised debate was health care. People are still very worried about health care. They're worried whether they have appropriate health care to cover them. Maybe they have health insurance, but the copays are such that they go in for what's considered a minor procedure, and then they've got $10,000 to $15,000 worth of copays. So health care is a huge issue, and it's why my administration is focused on building the Erie County Health Mall at an old closed clinic in Buffalo on 1500 Broadway, or working with ECMC. We hear back from folks, of course, about the Bills, and it's great to see the Bills winning and the Sabres winning. But, of course, the next county executive is going to negotiate a new lease with the Bills. So it could be a new stadium. It could be an extension of the existing lease. That's all going to be on the table. Hear back from folks, of course, about just county finances, and they complain about taxes. Well, we all know about taxes. No one's thrilled about taxes. But our county finances are in a very strong position now. And when I was elected county comptroller, they were the worst ever. And, of course, people talk about roads, too. But roads are something that you're always going to deal with in a climate such as ours. I am proud to say that the newest GBNRTC report, and that's the agency that rates roads in this area, on a scale of 1 to 10, they've now upped our roads to a 7, which is the highest it's truly been in decades. So I think we've done a pretty good job of addressing the road issues. There's always roads that are going to need to be fixed when you live in a climate like ours. But for the first time in many, many years, ours is rated in one of the higher categories. And truthfully, it's rated higher than a lot of the other municipalities in Western New York. So it just goes to show that we're investing in our road infrastructure as well.
Well, in terms of priorities, you want a third term as county executive. What is the biggest decision that you think the county executive will be making in the next 4 years?
Well, it's kind of tough to say because there's so many different things that we touch, Susan. We are very active in the healthcare and the wellness area. As you may remember, I recently released our latest health and wellness overall plan called Live Well Erie. That's not a 1 or 2 year plan. It's something that we believe is decades long. We're following a model that was used in San Diego, California, and now they're on their 10th anniversary for Live Well San Diego. It's a complete health and wellness plan. In some ways, it's also a poverty plan to give everyone the opportunity to reach their best potential, to give every child a chance to succeed, give our working families the tools that they need so that they can reach their full potential and make certain that our seniors' golden years are golden. That's what county government is. A lot of people think, oh, county government is just libraries and roads. Well, it's not. It's primary budget lines, and we have a $1.7 billion budget, that's billion with a B, is related to health and social services and wellness of our constituents. So I think it's important that people realize that when it comes to county government, that's our primary driver. That's what we're really focused on. Dealing with the bills lease is going to be important for the next county executive. Addressing issues of the economy. When I ran for county executive, I think we all remember the economy was pretty much in shambles. The unemployment rate was one of the highest it had been in a long time. It was about 9%. I came in and I said, I'm going to focus my administration on growing our economy with our partners in the private sector, and we've been able to do that. We now have one of the strongest economies this region has seen in over 50 years. And you're going to continue to have, if I'm elected, going to have continue to have a county executive who's focused on growing our economy well by further redevelopment of the Bethlehem Steel Plant or what we're trying to do in Angola, Evans area, which is build an agricultural industrial park. So it's very similar to what you see in Batavia. So that our agricultural community that is very strong in the southern part of our county has more areas and ways to sell their product and to producers, and there's a lot of producers. Think about Rich Products or Steuben Foods, Perry's. They use the agricultural products of the region. And if you have an agricultural industrial park and you bring more of those food processors in here, it allows our agricultural community to sell more of their product locally.
All those issues that you mentioned, you're going for a third term. What sort of advantage does that provide? Does having a county executive who's been in that position for many years, so 8 years and plus, what advantage would that give you over somebody just starting off new?
Well, for running, as an incumbent, it's a double-edged sword. You have your record that you're running on or against. And I'm proud of my record, and I think that's very important. Is you sometimes you see individuals when they run for a third term, they're trying to run away from their record. I'm not trying to run away from my record. I'm proud of our record of accomplishment, of growing our economy, getting the bills leased done in 2013 that kept them here through the death of Mr. Wilson. Of course, addressing the issues of the snowstorms and the winters we have. I was driving in and I heard you talking about the 13 years ago and the October surprise storm. I was the county controller then. I was in the Emergency Operations Center helping out the Collins administration, or excuse me, not the Collins administration, it was the Giambra administration back then, in my really my first year, one of my first years in office. And I remember how bad it was in this community and what you need to do when these storms happen. And I'm very proud of the team that we've assembled to handle emergencies in this region. And I think we have a pretty good reputation of being able to handle the winter storms. And that's one of the greatest responsibilities that the Erie County Executive has, is bringing our community together to respond in the storms. So I'm proud of my record. I think we've done a lot of good for our greater community. There's more work that needs to be done. The unemployment rate's right between 3.5% and 4%. It's kind of jumping up and down each month, which means that up to 4% of the population that's looking for jobs does not have one. So we're going to continue to focus on growing our economy and ensuring that those individuals have the tools to get the job that they're looking for and reach their full potential. We're still focused on addressing the greater needs of our community, and that's something that if I'm given the privilege to serve another term, I certainly will focus on.
Let's get into one of these big decisions, which is the Bills Stadium. And we know we're waiting for CAA Icon to give the results of their survey to the Pagulas, which won't be made public. I'm wondering, though, if it will be made public to you, Mark.
No, but I have been given assurances that if they find something structurally that's an issue with the stadium, they will turn that over to the county because we own the football stadium. We are responsible for the football stadium. We need to know if there's any structural issues. I think right now, after some of the work that's been done the last few years, the stadium's in pretty good structural shape. It's an old stadium. It dates back to 1973, but it's same age as Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, which just had a major retrofit. And I think that stadium is projected to last another 25 years. We know the bones of the stadium are good. Like anything that's been around for nearly 50 years, it's starting to get a little sore in spots. So there's some work that probably would need to be done in the future to ensure that it could last even longer. But the Pegulas have told me they will not be sharing the vast majority of that report with me, only the issues that deal with any structural problems with the stadium.
So it would be up to the next county executive to negotiate a lease. Maybe. That's if there isn't a decision on a new stadium. What are you expecting? Surely you have to have like an expectation one way or another what they're going to tell you.
Well, I'm not expecting any one thing in particular if I'm at that point. I've had, and we sit down with the Pegula administration quarterly. I generally sit down with Kim Pegula at least annually, and we talk about particular issues associated with the team and the football stadium. Issues with the whole campus, so to speak, out there. They've invested $36 million over the last 2 years in the campus, so to speak, $18 million 2 years ago with regards to the club seat restaurant area, another $18 million this year with regards to the training facility. So I don't think they're planning on leaving that location for any time soon. But that's, no matter what, something's going to have to be negotiated next year. Or in 2023. Make sure I get my years right. So starting in 2022, potentially even beforehand, there'll be discussions. But something's going to be negotiated, whether it's a new stadium or it's a further renovation. I've said all along, and I think you've heard me say this many times before, I don't negotiate in public and say lay my cards on the table and say here's what the county wants. But I think it's fair to say that there's going to be an in-depth negotiation, which the goal will be to ensure that it's a strong facility, whatever it might be, for the team and the community.
If the Pegulas say it's going to be a new stadium, it's got to be a new stadium, how do you move forward while keeping the best interests of the taxpayers, you know, in check here?
Well, you have to focus on what you believe is in the best interest for the community. Taxpayers might say, don't spend another penny on the stadium. But if the football team moved, is that in the best interest of the community? It certainly is in the best interest of this station and Entercom, because you like talking about the Buffalo Bills. And if they're now the London Bills, and you see this weekend, the NFL was in London again. If they're the London Bills, it's not going to be in the best interest of this community and a lot of other people. So I think what you have to do is keep in mind that what you're doing is negotiating on everyone. And there are folks in our community who are Bills fans, have been Bills fans their entire life, who might not be a taxpayer right now because they're just a senior and they don't pay income taxes. They might not pay property taxes. They may pay sales tax. But I think it's important that we do what's in the best interest of the community.
What do you get the sense of from talking to people on this issue? Because it seems like to me most people are of the mind that, you know, yeah, downtown stadium, that would be really cool. But if you really press me on it, they don't need to move out of the stadium in Orchard Park anytime soon. That's just fine. That can stay there for 100 years if it were up to me. So they kind of, one would be nice, but I don't care what they do as long as they're here.
I hear everything from the public. I hear people that are, don't put another cent in, don't give a penny to any billionaires that own a football team that makes lots of money. To other people, you do whatever it takes to keep the team here. And that's why you can never please everyone. Because when you represent a community as large and diverse as ours, about 1 million people, you're going to have many, many different viewpoints. So for me, it's to try to do what I believe is in best interest of the overall community.
Erie County owns the stadium. The state helps contribute to renovations, or has. But, I mean, talk about Bills fans. They're in Rochester. They're in the Southern Tier. They're in Ontario. But you don't get proceeds from those municipalities, right, to help out?
That is correct. A lot of Bills fans that live in Niagara and Cattaraugus, Chautauqua County, they don't contribute as the Erie County does. However, they do go to the games. They contribute sales tax in our region. They pay income tax, which then the state has used some of that revenue to help with regards to stadium costs. So I think it's fair that people have criticized, why is the state involved in this? why isn't it just Erie County? Well, as you noted, that this is a regional asset. It's just not the city of Buffalo and Erie County and the town of Orchard Park that benefit from it. It's the entire region. And so I think it's wholly appropriate that the state would contribute in the past, and whatever is done in the future, that the state would contribute then.
Want to switch focus, if we could, to another topic, roads, something you brought up, something you said you hear a lot about. I think for me that is the number one thing I hear about when we're talking about anything related to the county and county government. They want the roads. And I think you've done a pretty good job explaining in the past how it's dealt. You deal with the roads that are see the most traffic first, and then there's a priority, and then there's a certain budget. But does there ever come a time where, and I know in the most recent budget there is more money allocated to, you know, fixing some roads, but is there ever a point where you look at this and say, we need a full push? We need to, you know, really go all in and throw a lot of money, cut some things so that we can take care of, you know, XYZ road?
We're not going to cut anything to just put more money into blacktop. My administration has spent more on average than the two previous Republican administrations on an annual basis. My administration has spent $58.4 million average on roads per year. Collins administration spent $54.8 million, and the Giambra administration spent somewhere around $35 million, much less. But we're not going to go in there and cut libraries or cut parks just for more roads. I just want to remind everybody that Erie County has a very large inventory, much larger than most other counties, because back in the 1950s and 60s, the Board of Supervisors, the old Board of Supervisors, cut a deal with supervisors from the city of Buffalo and transferred hundreds of miles of roads from the towns to Erie County. So we have 1,200 centerline miles of roads. That's more than the states of Rhode Island, Hawaii, and I'm forgetting the other one. Vermont have in total. And that means we have 2,400 lane miles of roads at least, because you have two lanes for every 1 mile of road. We've done 1,256 miles of roads as of earlier this year, about June. So we've done even more than that. That's more than half of our road inventory. We don't have a single lane mile of road in the city of Buffalo. I'll often hear from folks about how the condition of the roads are in the city of Buffalo, and you guys are doing a bad job. And I'm like, well, the county doesn't do that. The county contributed a few hundred thousand dollars this year to the city of Buffalo to help do some roads in downtown Buffalo. But we don't and are not responsible for any of the roads in the city of Buffalo. There's many roads that are now on the county's inventory that used to be town roads, but because of a corrupt bargain done 50 years ago, they were transferred to the county. And the towns all laughed. Ha, 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 ha. We don't have the responsibility associated with the roads anymore. Yeah, but their folks drive on them. And when you have so many miles of roads, and we don't get federal infrastructure dollars like the states of Vermont, Rhode Island, and Hawaii get, we don't get it. We get some state dollars, but we don't get federal infrastructure dollars like the states do, even though we have more miles of roads than three states. It just means that we're going to have to constantly invest in them, but not invest as much as a state would. Could we do more? Yeah, I guess we could do more, and you bring it up. We could cut services. I'm not in favor of that. Or we could raise taxes. And I don't think the public's in favor of that, too. I mean, I've gone out and I've asked folks, well, if you knew that your taxes were going to be raised and the additional money would go to the roads, would you want it? And the general answer I've heard from people is no. So it's all part of governing. We have many responsibilities in government, parks, libraries, emergency services. But the vast majority of county government, 90% of it, of the $1.7 billion budget, is mandated expenses. And guess what's not included in the mandated expenses? Roads. It's not required. New York State does not require us to maintain our roads at a particular level. I mean, we could have all dirt roads, theoretically. And some of the roads that are county roads now, when they were transferred years ago, were basically gravel. So we work very hard. We do about 120 miles on average per year. We've done a little bit more than that in the last few years because we've put a little bit extra money in. But we live in a climate that is going to guarantee that we're going to have freeze thaws and we're going to have some road decomposition, so to speak. Earlier this year, I had a gentleman come up to me, and he said, you know, I go down south and live just outside of South Carolina for the winter. Why can't our roads be like that? And I reminded him, I said, why do you go south for the winter? He says, well, I don't like dealing with the snow and the sleet. I said, as soon as we have the weather of South Carolina and Florida, we'll have roads like South Carolina and Florida. And maybe with climate change, eventually that'll happen. But as long as you have the freeze thaws, you're going to have problems with roads in this region. And my administration is investing $72 million this year, working with our partners in the legislature and the capital budget. We've projected to spend a little over $80 million next year. And we're going to continue to invest in it. But I'm not going to cut other services just to do more roads.
Why is it that people think getting a road paved is political? That you have to know somebody to get a road paved.
That's not how it's done. It's actually done, and I mentioned earlier about the GA, Greater Buffalo Niagara Regional Transportation Council, GBNRTC. Say that five times fast. It's not easy. They rate roads. And what we do, and Brian, you mentioned it earlier, we look at the road. So if we have a road that's rated a 5 and another road that's rated a 5, and the one road that's rated a 5 gets 15,000 cars a day, and the other one gets 150 cars a day, which one is going to break down sooner? The one that has 15,000 cars on it. So that's the one that's done first. Now, someone who lives on the road that's got 150 cars are going to say, oh, they're only doing it because it's where 15,000 cars, it lives in the suburbs, that's all he cares about. No, I don't make the decision on where the road decisions are going. It's up to the engineers in our Department of Public Works. I get a report from our Public Works Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner for Highway saying, here's the roads that we're working on right now, and here's why we're doing it. I let them make the decision. The only thing that we decide is some of the big reconstruction projects. When we have the Capital Project Committee and we're talking about millions of dollars for 1 mile of road, then the legislators and I in the Capital Projects Committee will make a determination, okay, we're going to do this project this year and then that project the following year after that. But most of the projects that are done by the Department of Public Works are chosen by the engineers and are done based on the ratings and the traffic counts. I mean, some people might say it's an unfair system that my road doesn't have many people that drive on it, so mine gets done a little later than others. But the problem is if you have two roads that are rated a 5, one with 15,000 cars, one that's 150, the next year it's probable that the one with 150 is still going to be rated a 5. If we don't do anything on the road that's rated a 5 that's got 15,000 cars, it could be a 4 or 3 the next year. So that's why it's done.
You mentioned some of the roads that you don't have control over, the county doesn't have control over, but I'm sure you get calls on all of them, because knowing what road belongs to who is, for most people, they don't really think about that on a day-to-day basis. Is there anything you do or you can do to, you know, maybe give a little kick in the rear to a town or a municipality when it comes to a certain road that you might get a lot of calls on?
Well, if we get a call, and we do, on various roads that are not owned by the county, whether they're municipal roads like city or town, village, or the DOT or the thruway. I had a lot of people call in our office earlier this year about the 990. Mm-hmm. There was work that needed, or not this year, in the last couple of years, pulling cars fixed the 990. Well, it's a State Department of Transportation road. So we just forwarded the information on to our friends at the DOT. There's not a lot you can do to force it. I mean, it's an independent level of government, whether it's the state or a local government. You just say, we're getting complaints about these particular roads. We hope you address them. No different than if somebody contacts our office and says, we're getting a complaint about this road, which is a county road. We hope you address it. I understand that budgets are tight. You could do unlimited roads in a year if you had 12 months straight of good weather and we had unlimited dollars to spend, but we don't. We're not going to raise taxes just to pay for a little bit more work. When, remember, our season is basically from April through November, and then we stop. Last fall, we had a bad fall. It rained and it got really cold early, and you can't blacktop when it's raining, so we lost almost all of October and half of September. I know our Parks Department took a hit because we weren't getting revenue at our golf courses and things like that. So we had a bad fall last year, and this year everyone remembers the winter that never ended. I mean, it seemed to go on into March, into April, and we weren't able to start road construction season until later than we wanted. So we're at the mercy of Mother Nature just as much as we are the mercy of the purse strings and how much money we have to spend. We've had a very good summer and a good fall. I'm happy that that's the case because we were able to do all the roads that we had hoped to do this year. There's a couple projects that are still ongoing that are big ones, Lake Avenue, North and South Main Street in Angola. But we threw in a few extra roads at the end of the year that were planned to be done in 2020, just basic mill and overlays that we can do now because we had just enough money to do it and we had the time. So why wait another year like Borden Road in Cheektowaga?
The Buffalo Skyway is not a county road, but it is in Erie County. I'm wondering what you're thinking. We saw that big design competition that the governor launched, $100,000 for the best design proposal, which came up with a plan that would keep part of the Skyway standing and have a park, elevated park. Brian Higgins, the congressman, says it's coming down, all of it.
Well,
whose decision is it?
It should be the community's decision. Simple as that. I agree with Brian. I prefer to see the Skyway come down. When I heard about the proposal to leave this elevated section right in the heart of the waterfront district, I thought it was stupid. I mean, with all due respect to whoever designed it, they must not live here, because do we really want to have this giant behemoth? It kind of reminded me there'd be like four legs. It sort of looked like the Imperial Walker.
It's just about to say the Star Wars thing.
Empire Strikes Back. See this giant thing just towering over everyone. And I was totally surprised when I saw that. I go, I don't know who picked this. I'm sorry, but it's got to come down if you're going to do anything. But before you can do that, you got to be able to get traffic back and forth from the south towns to downtown. If you remember many, many years ago, there was discussion about building a south towns connector going up the rail lines that currently exist, but they're not using as many rail lines as they did in the past, so there's a possibility to do that. So the discussion would be to take Route 5 in to like Tiff Street, go up Tiff Street, which is two lanes in that area, even though they just did some major reconstruction as well. And then Tiff Street, you'd connect it through a South Towns connector going up the rail lines to the 190. That would be an exceptionally expensive project. I mean, it would be expensive to take the Skyway down, but it would be expensive to do a Skyway or a South Towns connector. There should also be a discussion potentially about rail from downtown to South Towns. At one point, there was a discussion about building a rail station behind the football stadium in Orchard Park because there's a rail line that exists. Why not? I mean, I've done above-ground rail in other communities. Denver's got a great above-ground line that runs miles and miles outside of the city, and that's how people come into work, as they take the rail. So I think everything should be on the table. They just did major work to the Skyway, so I don't expect anything to happen soon. But it is a discussion that needs to happen. If it is going to, portion of it's going to come down, in my eyes, it all should come down. And then it would open up further development in the Canal Side District and the waterfront. If you look underneath the Skyway presently, you don't see a development there. You see green space and maybe a small little building, but you don't see development. Why? Because things fall off the Skyway. You can't put development in people having fun with potentially a bolt that comes down and lands on their head. That would be the worst case scenario. So my goal would be in the long run, if it is to anything else major is to be done, it should come down. I do agree with Congressman Higgins on that.
Well, it gets so much attention, but where does it rank in terms of priority? You know, when it comes to putting money into a project, you mentioned all the dollars it would take to not only take down the Skyway, but make the alternate routes. Meanwhile, we're talking about things like a convention center or a football stadium. I think people are still waiting for the new train station to be, you know, fully realized and things like that. I mean, where does something like the Skyway rank when it comes to all these other projects that we talk about, too? And does it have to be one before the other? Can things happen at the same time?
Well, nothing can happen on a project like that unless we have federal infrastructure dollars. And we've heard for some time from the Trump administration that they were going to have infrastructure week became infrastructure month, which became infrastructure year, and there's still no infrastructure dollars coming. So you're not going to do a project like that unless you have federal infrastructure dollars. I support the expansion of the Metro Rail North. I think it's needed. Anybody who's driving around downtown Buffalo, especially around the medical campus, knows there's no parking, and there's literally going to be 20,000 people there on a daily basis. If you remember, Bethlehem Steel, there used to be 22,000 employees on the huge Bethlehem Steel site. There's going to be approximately 20,000 people in total between the employees at the medical campus and those who go there on a daily basis, and you don't have the parking for it. So you got to find ways to get people down there, and the best way to do it is by train, because the Allen Street Station is underneath the new medical school. So I would support the expansion of Metro Rail and do support it. I certainly were working on a potential for a new convention center. The football stadium is the football stadium. But you can't do these huge projects like taking down the Skyway and building a South Towns Connector, expanding the Metro Rail without federal infrastructure dollars. We need to get federal infrastructure dollars. I know Congressman Higgins has been talking about this for some time. I know Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, our senators, have been talking about it. But until there's a deal and money is flowing from the federal government this way, I can't see how you can do some of those big projects.
I want to bring up the Tesla plant in Riverbend, at Riverbend. It's not a county, per se, property, but it, again, is in Erie County. I know your opponent, Lynn Dixon, has called for an audit of Tesla. The state subsidized it to the tune of $750 million. And they've been short on job projections. We'll see if they meet the next target date in April to produce over 1,400 jobs or face a $41 million penalty. But how concerned are you about this project?
Well, as you noted, Susan, it's not a county project. If it was a county project, we would have had strong recapture policy, which means you don't get to keep the tax break you got. Now, originally Solar City, now Tesla, wasn't given the money. It was used to build the facility. And also buy the equipment in there. So there's an agreement that says, as you noted, that if they don't meet the job projections, regardless of how much money the state provided, they've got to pay $41 million back. I think it's appropriate to hold them to that, just like we would hold them to it at the ECIDA with regards to any tax breaks we gave them. If they didn't create the jobs that they said they would, then we recapture it. We take it a portion of the sales tax or property tax back. They have created, I believe, there are about 700 jobs now, and some of them are Tesla, some of them are Panasonic, and Panasonic, I don't think anybody's going to criticize Panasonic. They're one of the most well-known names in the electronics industry. They're making solar panels there. It's my understanding they're also now making some parts for the Tesla automobile, which is not a bad thing if that's what the direction it ends up going, is that we're making parts for a Tesla automobile, which is a very popular automobile, if not expensive. My goal would be to ensure that they create the jobs that they say they do. If not, have them pay the fine. And I think it's important that they succeed, because if they succeed, if there's about 700 people working there right now, those are 700 locals that are getting paid a good salary. We want those people to succeed. If they fail, then it hurts the overall economy. There's a lot of complaints about it. I know my opponent called for an audit. I thought it was interesting she called for an audit after the state comptroller's office had already started the audit. And I know because I've talked to Comptroller Tom DiNapoli about it. So they're looking into it. The state does know how many people are working there, because the state receives the withholding and labor information as well as the tax information. So they know exactly how many people are working there. That's like with the Buffalo Bills. We know exactly how much each player is being paid, as well as all staff members are being paid from the state, because they get the information with regards to their salary and how much is withheld from their salary, so to speak. So for the state, it should know how many people are already there. The state comptroller's office should have access to that information. It's my understanding that they have met their latest job goals. They're up to where they're supposed to be. Now the big jump is for the next year. If they don't do that, well, then they should be held responsible, and they should pay back the fine that they would then incur.
Are you worried at all that Western New York might get a bad look because of the way things have been going, the bad press that this plant has gotten? Or are you pretty confident that that's kind of fallen squarely on Elon Musk?
It's fallen to my eyes on Elon Musk and Tesla. I've said my things about Elon Musk in the past. There's a guy who's a multi-billionaire. He does not like to fail. And if there's anything that's close to that, he invests money and tries to ensure that it becomes a success. So I don't believe this has any impact with regards to us as a region. I have not heard that from others. And remember, there's a lot of other businesses in our region that have many more jobs than the Solar City / Tesla plant. I mean, there are places that have thousands of jobs. Erie County government itself has over 4,000 jobs. I mean, M&T Bank has thousands of jobs. We see continued investment from a lot of other businesses in our region. And I think that's important for people to understand that we're not going to live or die based on this project. For the longest time, they talked about silver bullet projects, the silver bullet that's going to save us. And there is no Lone Ranger riding in on his horse with the silver bullet in his gun. What saved this region was each and every one of us. The silver bullet was us. It was us as a community coming together. and saying, we're going to rebuild this new Buffalo, this new Erie County. And now we have the strongest economy that this community has seen in basically my lifetime. So I think it's important that no matter what happens with the Tesla plant, that this economy is still strong.
Was that a mistake then by the state in maybe reaching for that silver bullet? Because that's what this seemed like. Meanwhile, you have like M&T, you mentioned, moving into One Seneca Tower, putting a bunch of new jobs there. I mean, should that huge sum of money been focused on, you know, spreading it around to smaller projects?
Well, that was the plan. I sat on the Regional Economic Development Council, still do, and the original plan was to have invested in all different sectors, and it has been invested in many different sectors. Not all the money went to that project. You've got money, of course, that went to construct the Northland Workforce Training Center, which is very important because we need to train people for the jobs of today and tomorrow. You had, of course, a lot of money go into the medical campus. You had money go into other projects as well, smaller projects. I mean, sometimes $50,000 on one little project can spur a lot of jobs, depending on how the employer goes. So it wasn't my decision. My decision was to spread it out further, but the state decided to go in that direction. And we want to see it succeed. There's no doubt about it. If it succeeds in the long run, then that's good for our region because that'll not only mean 1,500 jobs at least at that facility, but spinoff.
A convention center, that's something else that's on your radar. We know from a survey that Erie County residents want to keep or to stay in the convention business, right? That was the question. Where does the process stand now in deciding whether to expand the current one or to build a new one?
Well, if you remember, Susan, we did a analysis and report about a year and a half ago, maybe a year, on the campaign. You start to lose track of time. I do know it's Monday. And I do know there's 22 days until Election Day, but I don't know what day of the week it is. I mean, I don't know what day of the month it is. So it's been a little bit over a year or so since we did a report to identify what would be considered the finalists, the two sites that we are looking at, one which is the between Perry and Scott Street, kind of across from the hockey arena, is a new location and an expansion site, which would be between Delaware and Pearl. Is that right? Or is it Franklin? No, Delaware and Franklin, excuse me, not Pearl. Across from sort of where New Era Cap has its headquarters. And we identified those final two sites. They came up with some rough costs, but not actual real costs in that report. So now we're doing an analysis which includes everything, environmental impact, ground testing, looking at the buildings that may be on site that would have to come down. Is there asbestos in there, so to speak? What would be the cost of acquiring the property? And that report should be ready for release sometime in the first quarter of 2020. The consultant that has been hired is a specialty consultant. That's all they do is like high profile convention centers and those types of projects. They worked on a very similar project in Memphis, where Memphis was looking at either building a new one or expanding. Memphis eventually expanded, even though it wasn't that much different in price than building a new one, because they felt it just worked better for their community. So they're going to provide us all that information, and then sometime in 2020, the next county executive, the next legislature, because remember, every legislator is up in this election too, will have a report in front of them, and we'll have to make a determination what direction to go. I remind everybody we have a convention center that was basically built in 1980. We've got this new Buffalo, this new Erie County, and when that convention center was built, we were talking proud. It's been that long. And it's had updates, but it's old, it's antiquated, it's too small for the modern convention business, and we are not meeting the comparable types of facilities that you see. I'm not talking about New York City or Chicago. I'm talking about like Hartford and Grand Rapids, or for that matter, Niagara Falls, Ontario has a nice modern convention center. And we've lost some business that normally would have come to Buffalo Niagara Convention Center in Buffalo because the Niagara Falls, Ontario Convention Center is a nicer convention center. And it's right in Niagara Falls, Ontario. And I think we all know what's in Niagara Falls. So it's important that we are able to compete with our peer group because that's business that's brought into our community. People come in from outside, they spend money in hotels, we generate hotel tax and sales tax, they spend money in our restaurants, that's jobs in our restaurants, it's sales tax for our community, And we want that to continue.
Well, what is the impact of a convention center, and what types of events do you foresee it drawing? Because as someone who lives here, I think most people who live here kind of look at the convention center and say, okay, there's a home show there, there's an auto show there, and then there's a beer fest, and then it's, I don't know, like something else happens there, I'm sure.
Well, actually, our convention center is used a lot of nights of the year, especially for local events like dinners and galas. But it's also used for conventions. I'll give you a good example. A couple of years ago, we had the National Homeland Security Conference here, where emergency services and Homeland Security representatives from across North America, I shouldn't say national, it was North American Homeland Security Conference, people from Canada, people from Mexico, people as far away as Guam came here. We had about 1,500 attendees here for about 4 days, and each one of them stayed in a hotel room overnight. It was a great economic boom, but that's about as big a convention as we can get. And we had to work with our friends in Niagara County to get enough people or like have enough things at a convention sites up there too so that we can handle this convention properly. Based on the size of our community, we should be able to hold conventions and events that are at least 2,500 people, but we really can't because our convention center is too small. They can't have multiple events in the ballroom. Like in most conventions, you would see two or three dinners a night, like two or three different events. But because our ballroom's too small, you can only have one in the ballroom. And then even if you go upstairs into the main convention hall, where you often will see dinners and galas, because of the way it's built, you can't have two things going on at the same time because you can hear through the temporary walls. You want to be able to avoid that. And you could have more events, and that generates more revenue, which generates more money for the community.
Could the timing be right to tie it with a new stadium, if there was a decision for a stadium downtown?
I have spoken to the Bills organization. They don't seem interested in that. There's only one community that has a combo convention center football stadium. That's Indianapolis. A lot of people point to it. But if you talk to some of the folks in Indianapolis, they say it really isn't as good as they'd like. It helps them get some things. But in other, you got to remember, when you have a football stadium, the football team controls the facility. So they don't want a convention coming in and using their stadium during football season. So I think we're in a direction as this community. We got to do what's in the best interest of this community. And I believe what's in the best interest is a standalone convention center that's focused on conventions and types of galas and dinners and things like that, as compared to something that's a combo that just isn't right for our community.
One of the things I always say, it's maybe an issue that touches everybody, hardly ever gets talked about, internet access. You mentioned this ErieNet, maybe going back almost a year ago now, and then it was included in the most recent budget. Where does that stand, and how important of an issue do you think internet access and having a competitive environment when it comes to internet access, where so many people only have one option, is for everyone in Erie County?
It's huge, especially in the southern part of the county, the more rural areas, or for that matter, even in the city of Buffalo, to have good access to high-speed, reliable internet. And if you might have a internet provider, but it often isn't as high speed as you'd like, and it's not always as reliable. And some parts have nothing. So what we talked about was building what we call ErieNet, as you note. It's the backbone of a regional system. It's about a 360-mile high-speed fiber system that we would then lease out to parties to tap into for final mile delivery to homes or businesses, or for what we think it really would be used for, which is 5G implementation. You hear in some communities they're starting to implement 5G. It's not happening here. They don't have the internet backbone, the fiber backbone, to do a 5G system here. So it looks like Buffalo, for the time being, is going to be a 4G at best. And depending on where you live, you may have no Gs. You may have just basic internet service and no cell service. So I think it's important that we don't put ourselves behind the eight ball. Because remember, if you're a business, if you're a site selector and you're looking at a location and you find out that, okay, I want to go down, I like this location, I want to be in the town of Collins or the town of Concord in the southern part of Erie County, and then the site selector tells the business, you can't get high-speed internet. Guess what happens? It gets crossed off. It won't even be considered. So it's something that my administration announced earlier this year at the State of the County. It seems like forever, but it was earlier this year. And we did put money in the 2020 budget for the development, the engineering and architectural aspect of it, as well as to pay for some of the legal things that we have to do to set up ErieNet. So the goal would be to design it in 2020 and ensure that it's all set so that we could start rolling it out and laying the cable, so to speak, the fiber optic cable in 2021.
In the meantime, is it worth putting even more pressure? I know this has been done in the city of Buffalo, but from a county perspective, on a place like Verizon to work on their own build out or start developing their plans to build off of an ErieNet?
Brian, I'm so sick and tired of sending letters and calling people in Verizon and they're like, yes, we know, and then they do nothing. I guarantee you, if we do ErieNet, that maybe they'll do something because they hate competition. It's as simple as that. This is going to create competition. This is going to drive down cost. We have sat down with a number of the local internet providers and some of the major parties as well. I know AT&T is very interested in ErieNet. They would like to tap into it and eventually for the 5G system, and that's money that would be generated, that would be paid to the ErieNet Corp, so to speak. We have to set up like a not-for-profit corp to run it. And so they'd pay that, and it would basically sustain the organization. It would be revenue that would be generated to sustain ErieNet. So I think look at it this way. Competition is good, and in some areas right now there's no competition for high-speed internet. In the city of Buffalo, where I live, Spectrum now, but there's no Verizon Fios. They didn't lay any fiber optic cable down like they should have. They're not intending to do it. And if this forces them to do more and reduce their costs, then that's a good thing, too.
Is the answer competition, or is the answer maybe in the future treating this like a public utility?
Well, it should be treated in some ways like utility right now when we're talking about internet to homes and businesses as well as cell service, your mobile service. It is not necessarily treated that way today, but I think everyone – It's almost as needed as getting electricity to the house. We all know what it's like when the cable goes down after a storm. Everyone's basically, oh my Lord, what are we going to do? Oh, we got to read a book now. Can't watch TV. Kids can't play on their Kindles and all their other devices and
that's
things
why
like
wrote
that.
One.
What?
That's why you wrote one.
Yeah, that's exactly.
For the next storm.
All right. Hey, I want to ask you about the divisiveness in this country, the toxic atmosphere it seems that we're living in on a daily basis. Is it it's trickling down to the local level? Do you hear about this every day?
It's pretty bad out there, but I think we can still have a conversation like the three of us are having, and it can be cordial on the issues. Some people are taking things to such an extreme, it worries me. And we see it because we see mass shootings across the country, and often it's racially motivated, religiously motivated. And this didn't happen many, many years ago. I'm very disappointed in what's happening. I think we can disagree on the issues. We can disagree on policy. We can do it without the nastiness, without the name-calling. And it starts at the top. I mean, I've been critical of the president on many things. I've also given him kudos on things that he's done well, like his administration. I think they've addressed the opiate epidemic on a national level well. But you can't be president and go out there and call people names. And just recently he was using very vulgar language. Because then it translates over. Then people think, well, it's okay if the president does it, then I can do it. And that's not good because you can have disagreement on the issues. You can have disagreement on policies. But we need to talk that through and realize that just because something didn't happen that you wanted doesn't mean it's the end of the world.
What about the Ellen DeGeneres moment last week? She attended the Cowboys game with President Bush, and she was criticized for that. And then she came out publicly, and she said, you know, she can be friends with people that she's, you know, not in politically agreeing with.
Yeah, I mean, it was important for her to say that. I think we all realize that politics is a tough business. I posted something yesterday about there's a former satirist in the late 19th century who had a character called Mr. Dooley, and Mr. Dooley used to talk about politics. He said, politics ain't beanbag. And it's not. It's tough. But that doesn't mean that you should hate your opponent. It just doesn't mean you should hate your neighbor or the individual that you disagree with on issues. And it was important for her to come out and say, listen, George W. Bush and I don't agree on everything, but I can sit down with him at a football game and watch the football game, and we can have a good time. And that doesn't mean that you agree with that person on everything. The problem is today, people can find an echo chamber that responds and says everything that they want to hear. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, if you wanted to get be in that kind of thing, you had to get a newsletter through the mail. You had to go to your local group, and there may be three of you sitting there. Now you can go to the internet, and you can be there and see thousands and thousands of individuals who agree with everything you say. And so you automatically think, well, then if they all agree with me, then that's the thing that has to be done.
It seeks you out.
Yeah. And so at this point, I think it's important for people to understand that when you live in a society like ours, an open society with the freedom of speech and so forth, you're going to hear things that you don't agree with. It's when I've heard some bigoted comments and racist comments, I'll be the first one to say, yes, the First Amendment right of freedom of speech protects that individual from saying that. But it also gives me the right to call that person a bigot for saying it. And I think it's important that we call out the things that are inappropriate. But we realize just because we disagree on a political issue doesn't mean it's life or death.
All that being said, when this campaign's over, your opponent, Lynn Dixon, or whoever it might be that you end up working with down the line, you think there's anything standing in the way, even after a political campaign, of working together?
There shouldn't be. I mean, I've been involved in some rough and tumble campaigns in the past, but politics is politics, but then you have to govern. You have to put the politics aside. It's very similar to what we deal with in the emergency situations in the storm. Sheriff Howard and I have not always agreed on things. We've been opposite sides of political campaigns, but when there's a storm and I'm sitting there with members of the sheriff's office, we take our hats off and we work with each other for the betterment of the community. And I've given credit to the sheriff's office during some of the storms, whether it's Mark Whipperman, the undersheriff, or others that are there in the command center. We work together to move the community through. We could disagree on other things, but we realize that when push comes to shove, we're elected by the people to serve, and we serve.
We appreciate the time this morning, Mark. If elected, would you consider joining us on a regular basis?
Sure. I mean, I certainly am familiar with this studio here. I'd be glad to.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It is.
Great decorations up there.
Maybe need a new decoration or two.
All right. That is Mark Poloncarz, Candidates in Conversation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.